This episode of the Android Central Podcast is brought to you by the History of Android. This is our eight-week series. We're a few weeks into it now, where we kind of just discover the beginnings of Android and walk through it together, holding hands down yellow brick roads. We have interviews with some of the executives who have brought you some of your favorite phones. Just a really good look back at where we've come and where we're going. I think we're on week three now, so some really good stuff going on. Alex Dobie's doing a really great job running it, so go to historyofandroid.com to check it out. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 260. That seems like a high number, too. Not like I didn't know it was coming. For Friday, October 30th, 2015, happy Halloween, I guess. Are there countries that don't celebrate Halloween? Is that a worldwide thing or just a stupid U.S. sugar up your kids candy thing?
If there are, they need some U.S. freedom quick because Halloween is the bomb.
America. Alex, what are you getting dressed up as?
I'm getting dressed up as myself, as you can see right now.
I'm dressing up as Alex, too.
I was going to say we all should have put on blonde wigs and...
Good eye, aluminium.
That would be Jerry at Android Central.
That's just offensive now, Jerry.
Wow. Wow. On behalf of everyone in America, I apologize for that one. Wow. Andrew Martinick's over there, by the way.
I'm just reading the different Halloween cultures around the world on Wikipedia right now.
And he's smart enough not to say anything right about it.
Really, just trying to get a grasp here.
Really more interesting than anything else we have to talk about this week.
I know. Actually, we do need to get right into it because it's a little insane. We have seven voicemails, partly to make up for last week when I was woefully unprepared to do a podcast.
Whoa.
What?
Not you.
I know. Surprising, right? And so this week, I'm almost prepared. I've even got them like...
Are we going to go with them off the top here?
Yeah, I think we will. Real quick, if it's your first time joining us, hi, I'm Phil. How's it going? Andrew, Alex, Jerry. Had to look and see who was here. We do this once a week. We do it live. We do it, you know, on video. So every now and then, somebody makes a joke that's video only. Every now and then, we make one that's audio only. Every now and then,
at the start of this podcast, there was a nice visual joke.
We kind of
people say things with. Lower third sometimes.
Hey, wait a minute. I just realized you have my name on your lower third with that.
I know, because that was the default name on the PSD, and I didn't.
Oh, I thought that was part of the joke. I missed it.
It kind of is.
Yeah, a little bit.
Part of the joke.
We've been arguing all day about what the best Android phone is. So, but yeah, we got a lot going on. So we got seven voicemails. I want to get into those in a minute. I want to talk about this Chrome Android merger thing, which don't freak out. I want to talk a little more LG V10 now that our review is up. What was the other thing I wanted to talk about? There was something else. I don't remember what it was.
Samsung Galaxy View, Phil.
That was it.
Droids.
That was it. So before you do that, go download our app. We got some big updates out today, a lot of bug fixes, so that's good. We got a couple more days to go on our Pure Android t-shirt. Not a giveaway, I guess, but it's a limited edition sale thing. So it's not just a shirt. You can get hoodies and long sleeve shirts and all that. So if you go to androidcentral.com, I think it's /pureandroid. It is now. I guess I need to make it that. You can order shirts that way. What else did we have going on? I think that's it. We got a Nexus 5X contest going on, too. So go find that.
We got our Android History series Android well history. Underway now.
Historyofandroid.com.
Yep, we now own that. So first two parts up. We'll have another one next week, carrying on until...
What is next week? I haven't read it yet.
Next week is basically sort of Android making it big. 2009, 2010, sort of era, starting off with the Nexus 1.
I suppose the bigger question is, do I still owe you anything for that?
I don't know. We'll have to find out. I think you're good, though.
You have like 48 hours to get it from me.
Yep.
So let's just get into the voicemails and get going because we got a lot to do. And the first one comes from Alex. No, see, I hit play, but I knew I wasn't ready. Does that count?
It's okay, Phil.
I guess it doesn't count. Fine.
You can edit that part out.
I can, but I'm not gonna.
Hello, Android Central. This is Alex. I'm from Arlington, Texas. I have a question about guidance for wearables. Currently, I have a Pebble Steel, and although I love the battery life, occasionally the device will not automatically reconnect to my Samsung S6 Edge when I enter the Bluetooth range, and then I have to go in manually to access the Pebble app and reconnect. Is there a wearable out there that does not have this issue? Is this purely a Bluetooth thing, or is it something that got better with Android Wear and some of the newer devices? So any guidance that you could give me on this would be great. And I appreciate your show, and have a great day. Thank you.
What was the phone?
The S6 Edge.
S6 Edge. It sounds like Bluetooth being wonky, like Bluetooth is wonky sometimes. I remember when Phil and I were both using the Gear S2 for a little bit, and I think that was that, and Phil was saying he was having trouble with it reconnecting when he came back into Bluetooth range, yeah. And I had the same exact setup with the same watch and phone and didn't have that problem.
To be fair, I've had that same exact problem with every single phone and every single device or peripheral or whatever. It's just plain Bluetooth being Bluetooth.
Sometimes Android Wear is kind of like that for me. It's really weird whenever I set up a new watch or, you know, reconnect a new watch for the first time, whatever. I usually have to restart either the watch or Bluetooth on the phone, which is kind of strange. But
yeah, I know that my issues with Android Wear has been that it's like the system is connected to it over Bluetooth, but the Android Wear app service isn't aware that it's connected. And I think that, you know, Pebble could easily have the same issue where the phone is not talking to the app.
Bluetooth is magic. Jerry, anything to add to that? Good luck.
The Pebble's the only one that's never given me that problem, so I'm just being quiet.
That's no help at all.
It's Bluetooth walk.
On to the next one from Andy.
Hey, it's Andy here. I love the podcast, guys. Got a quick question. I'm looking at getting a new phone, and I consider the two premium flagships at the moment are the Galaxy Note 5 and the Nexus 6P. They're the best in the business. So I'm tossing up between the two. Now, it looks to me like they're both at the top of their game, but the Note 5's got a slightly better camera, best-in-class display and CPU, but you've got to weigh that against the software experience of TouchWiz, which I'm not so keen on. Just wondering what you guys think, which way you would go in terms of Note 5 or 6P. Okay, cheers, guys. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
So I'm kind of on the fence. As you can see from my lower third, I'm kind of on the fence about it. What do you guys think?
No, the screen's the same.
But yeah, hang on. Alex's lower third, for those not watching the videos, the Note 5 is the best Android phone instead of Alex's name, but then it has my name on it.
I should change mine to say Alex is wrong.
So anyway, continue.
The screen is the same. That's a wash. It's the same panel. There are, you know, apps on the Note 5, I'll call them apps, settings to change the screen a little bit.
Well, hey, and hang on. And that's not to say that every screen is going to be tuned the same, right?
Right. It's they're, you know, Samsung can spend a little more money and fine tune the display. But in any case, there are more ways in the software to change the display on the Note 5 than there are on the 6P. So if out of the box you don't like it and want to tweak it, the Note 5 wins. The camera, the only difference I see is in really bright light where the Note 5 seems to take better pictures, and really low light where the 6P seems to take better pictures. So
I also want to know, like, the 6P doesn't have the manual camera mode and all the pro mode stuff built in. Like in the 6P in auto mode might take better pictures in low light. But if you're willing to stand there for maybe, you know, take maybe a half second to 2 second exposure, you're probably going to get better results out of the Note if you can swing that kind of situation.
Right. To do anything with any manual controls on the 6P, you have to download an app. Manual camera is the one I've been using, but there are others. I think it all comes down to, you know, your personal preference. Man, you can't go wrong with either one of these phones.
You really can't, no. I mean, you know what I would ask you is where you prefer your fingerprint sensor.
That's a good point. If you
that might be the differentiator. Yeah. And I've been flipping back and forth.
I'm super all in on the way the Nexus does it, with the way it can instantly unlock the phone. And my finger just lands there every single time now.
You really want to screw with your brain, though? Pick up Nexus 6, and I keep hitting the dimple trying to turn the phone on.
First thing I did when I took that Droid Turbo 2 out of the box was I was like, oh, nice job with this thing there that just totally messes with my brain.
It's a good question. Next one is from Arjen.
Hi, Android Central. This is Arjen van Hooydonk from the Netherlands. Quick question about the new Nexus 6P. I'm really looking into it to see if it's going to replace my Nexus 5. But looking at the price hike it gets in Europe, which puts it right in the area of the Sony Xperia Z5 or 64 gigabyte Galaxy S6 or the S6 Edge 32 gigabyte, is it worth the price or is it better to go for one of the other phones? I really enjoy the Nexus quick updates of software. But what else is there to set it apart from the other phones? Hope to have an answer from you. Bye.
I mean, I think you can't really position this Nexus like the other Nexuses, right? This is right. We're not in this position where you get a Nexus and there are all these trade-offs and you kind of put up with it because it's either cheaper or it gets faster updates or both. This is, aside from the fact it's a Nexus, it's just a good phone in general. It does just about everything else as well as any current high-end Android phone. That includes the areas like camera, battery, where Nexuses have kind of fallen short in the past.
Yeah, and I think that's something you can say about this Nexus that you couldn't say about the others. I mean, this is just a good all-around phone, whereas the others had like one or two kind of deal breakers for me.
Right. The past ones, the thing that made them good is they were a Nexus. They were secure, up to date, and you could monkey with them if you wanted to. This one's a good phone even if it wasn't a Nexus.
Well, I was thinking back to the Nexus 4 and how much I liked it, but no LTE.
Yep. I mean, I think one thing that you can say is that if he's super happy with having his current Nexus and he wants to keep on that line, there's additional synergies there with just picking up a new Nexus as well.
Well, I won't hesitate to tell anybody to get the 6P. I really love this phone.
We were talking about it earlier, and I'm just not seeing all these people madly in love with the 5X. I really think the 6P is the way to go. The 5X is just kind of a disappointing phone. If it didn't say Nexus on it, I don't think we'd give it a second thought.
I know people expect me to love the new Nexus. I get that because that's just how I am. But look at everybody. Everybody that's used this thing and reviewed this thing is really liking it. So, you don't have to be afraid that it's not a decent piece of hardware. It's good.
And it's big, but it's so thin. It really...
Right.
And I think I'm starting to come around a little bit on the big phone. I mean, I still prefer something that feels a little smaller, but
you have to.
The little details in how they're designed just go a long, long way.
I gave up. You're going to have to give up too, man. You're just going to have to say, Sony's never going to sell us a good phone in a small package here in the States, so just do it.
Yeah.
Well, I said a lot of the same things about the Note 5, where I said you're going to have to give up the fact that you're just going to have to deal with a slightly bigger screen. Yep. Because the Galaxy S6 just doesn't make sense, even though the screen size is vastly preferable to me. And like Phil said, with the changes in the way that the Note 5 is designed, it just works in that size, and you can definitely figure it out because... Even if you would prefer something like a half inch smaller, you're just going to deal with it because the Note 5 is so great.
If we have time, I want Jerry to talk about the V10, which he's had in his hand for like an hour now. But
full review.
Yeah, exactly. Here is probably my favorite voicemail of the week, and really Jerry and I are the only ones equipped to answer this, I think. Maybe Jerry, because you've been married twice now, and I've only been married once. So this comes from Matt. I love this. Hang on. I think this is the right one.
Hey guys, Matt here from New Jersey. I'm calling because I'm actually getting married in 4 days, Friday the 23rd, so actually maybe when you're recording this. And my fiance, she is taking my last name. She has an Android phone and a Gmail account. And so me being the nerd I am, I kind of reserved her Gmail name, her new Gmail name. We created her account. We haven't transferred anything over yet. And so I wanted to know, how do we preserve her apps and, her Android data if we sign in on her Moto X on her new Gmail account? Is there a way to transfer over all of her stuff from her current Gmail account to the new last name Gmail account? Apps, contacts, all that stuff. So any help would be appreciated. It's pretty in-depth, but I'd really appreciate the help. Thanks, guys.
First, how smart is this guy? Or how dumb is he? I can't decide which.
Well, way smarter than I was. That's why I'm on marriage number two. But
so hang on. First, congratulations, Matt.
And
your fiance, who you let remain nameless, which might be a smart thing, but on the other hand, I kind of want to know what her name is. Can you not just change an account name? I never thought about that.
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, I've heard magical fables and stories that people have been able to change their name or transfer all their data from one account to the next, but there's no way to do it.
My first suggestion is that the only outside facing interaction with that email has been, you know, actually using that address for people to email you, and you can set up an alias inside Gmail and use a separate name, especially now that he controls the other Gmail account. So at least for sending and receiving email, you can start to use a new address.
But I get it. I mean, it's not the same thing, and she'd be typing, you know, the old name, and, you know, I mean, and that's what they want to do. Yeah, I mean, so that's my first question. I'm a little surprised you can't change names in the account, maybe.
No, you can take out all of your data, and I'm pretty sure for, like, contacts, you can export them.
Yeah.
Tab database.
The, and then the apps are all linked.
But, yeah, your apps.
Subscriptions.
And things like Google Play Music, you're right, your subscriptions, there's no official way to do that, but I have heard stories. You know, maybe they're true, maybe they're not.
When we saw people changing from, like, their personal Gmail accounts to a Google Apps account for Google Plus back in the day, like, you would lose all your pictures and stuff, but you could move everything over and then re-upload it. I mean, honestly, what I would do, if you can't do any of that, and I'm a little surprised I don't know the answer to that. What you do is just sign in with, and this is the way I do it, because I have my personal account, and then all of our work stuff is through Google Apps. So I sign in with my personal account first. That's what Google Play is under, and that's the big one, right? So all your app downloads and stuff work. And then you sign in with your secondary account for, you know, whatever email, and that hooks in all the Google services for that account as well. And then in most, let's see if I've got a phone here. Does anybody have a phone?
You'd want to sign in on your new account first. Make that the main account on your phone.
Well, yeah, it just depends on which one you want to be main. Doesn't really matter.
And then sign in with your other one, and you'll be able to install all your apps.
Right, and then in specifically in Google Apps, like you see up here where it has, you know, philnickinson@gmail.com, you just hit the little drop down, and then I can change over to my Smartphone Experts account. Back and forth. And that works in Google Play as well.
That's only worth it if, like, the amount of apps that she has purchased is in the triple digits, like, range. Anything lower than that, and it's easier to use one account and just rebuy a few apps.
Maybe. I mean, that's
I mean, especially considering that you can export all of your contacts and Gmail. Everything can be moved over.
I was thinking more about the app data than the apps themselves. That's
something. But how much of that is actually tied? I mean,
and it depends on the apps you're using. I mean, that app data is all there. It's just a matter of what account it's pulling from. So it kind of depends on the apps. I mean, because when you're talking app data, are you talking, you know, like Google Play has app data, and then you just toggle between the two? I probably just said that really awfully, though.
I mean, I just don't think there are that many situations in which all that has to be tied to the old account to where you're stuck using two accounts on your phone.
I think the alias idea is the easiest.
You can at least do that. If all you want to do is now when you send and receive email, you have a new name at gmail.com, that can easily be set up just in Gmail in 5 seconds. You can just create a new alias.
What you do is you give the new Gmail, you give the old Gmail account access to the new one.
Yep.
That's what I do as well. I have my own Google Apps account that I use for my family, and then I never actually log into that. I just have my, you know, Phil Nickinson at Gmail sucks that in too. So that's another option. But no, I mean, congrats. And congrats for making yourself your wife's tech support.
It's a little annoying that there's no clear way to do this.
Yeah.
But.
Really good question, though. I like that a lot.
That's why my email is Hello Kitty 64. That way, it doesn't matter if I change my name.
I had I was doing some banking stuff a couple of weeks ago, and I changed the email to my other apps account name, and the bank actually called me, and they're like freaking out. Like, did you change your email address? I'm like, yeah. Why? Well, we're just checking. I was like, and I don't think about it because it all comes the same place anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it really meant nothing to me. But congrats, Matt. Hope you're still married 2 weeks in. Sorry we didn't get to you last week. Now we have Nathan.
Hey guys, Nathan from Zanesville, Ohio, and recently my Nexus 5 just bit the dust. I'm looking at either a used Nexus 6 or a brand new Nexus 5X. I'm about to become a first-time dad, so I'd like a good camera, but I also don't want to spend a whole lot of money. Thanks.
I think if you're going to purchase at this point, and you really don't want to spend that extra $120 on the 6P, you get the 5X over the old 6.
As soon as you said camera, the 6 is out.
Yeah.
Mm.
The camera on the 6 is okay, but you don't. That's not a phone you'll buy.
This generation's the next level.
Right.
I'm just... It's not that the camera on the 5X is bad, it's just that it's so slow. It's... I guess they could fix that, maybe.
But it's not worse than their old Nexus 6.
I'm glad his heart seems to be set on buying a Nexus phone. I mean, one more for our team. But the G4 is going to fit your price range and have a really freaking good camera. But the software, especially coming from the Nexus 5, you may want to track me down and kill me.
I was going to say exactly that. I didn't want Andrew yelling at me.
That plenty.
Hey, by the way, while you're answering that, I'm stalking Matt on Google+. Just because, you know, he emailed me. I got his name.
Uh-oh.
So, treat her right, Matt. That's all I'm saying. I was looking to see if they're married, like wedding pictures or something, because that's stalking. But I wanted to make sure he didn't screw it up already. Friday. What's that?
They were getting married last Friday.
Right. So I wanted to make sure he didn't screw it up 1 week in. I'm just checking. Just looking out for the guy. Maybe the name thing was a bigger deal than we anticipate. Maybe, oh my God, what if they're not married anymore because of us? Because we didn't answer it. Oh, that would
He's
be.
He's already got the Google account.
That would be. That'd be
all your fault. I was away.
No, congrats, Matt. That's awesome.
So I don't know, very much like the earlier question, I think that if he was already happy with his Nexus 5 and how that works, and I mean, it sounds like it is, if that's his decision to go to a newer Nexus 6 or Nexus 5X, I think you just get the 5X and you're a year newer, and you, especially if camera is important, the 5X is just a big step above the old Nexus 6.
I think they'll clean up some of those camera lag issues I have.
Yeah, I mean,
well, I heard
the whole thing is just got some software issues in general. I think it's just the camera.
What's that, Jerry?
I heard a rumor that you'll very, very shortly be getting an update in Google Play for the camera app that fixes the slow to focus and slow to take a picture issue.
Ah, why about
that? The end result's really good.
Cool. Next we have Paul. Two to go.
Paul in Massachusetts here. Had a question about camera apps. As I sit here and wait for my 5X to show up tomorrow, I've heard people in their previews and hands-on saying that the camera app is kind of basic. And so I wondered if you guys could take a couple minutes to discuss other camera apps that you might recommend and what the pluses and minuses are of using those camera apps. Do I lose anything in the image processing by using an app other than the one that comes stock with the unit? Thanks very much.
What do you guys like?
I like the basic app for most things on the Nexus. I have to be honest. Unless you want, you know, your face in a picture, dual, you know, frames and all this other stuff, you just point it and shoot. It takes good pictures. For manual stuff, I've been using manual camera, and I'm still at the point where the automatic results look better than my manual ones, so I'm not ready to say it's good or bad yet. I do have on my list of things to do to look at a bunch of camera apps, the ones with a lot of features, and make sure they still take good pictures on your Nexus phone. That way you'll have both.
And the way I think about it is I always go with the default camera app. I know that one is made for the camera, the hardware that's on the phone, and it's set up to give you the best image processing possible. Obviously, not having manual controls, like that's something you can't get over without installing another app. But I always think of it as, I'm getting the most out of that sensor in the processing when I take it with that original camera, and then I can go edit it in a different editor or something like that. But I'll always have that original you know, backed up and ready to go. I think it's important to have the first picture you take get as much as possible. That's why, you know, if you have a camera that takes raw pictures and you're interested in doing editing, you always take your picture in raw first.
And it's worth mentioning that it's the same camera app that's been on the Nexus 6 and Nexus 5 and, you know, any other Nexus phone for the past 6 months, 8 months. And, you know, it's the one you can download from Google Play. The magic in these cameras all seems to be post-processing and the new hardware.
Yeah.
So any camera app should take pictures that are really good. But until I've actually done it, I don't want to say that they will.
All right, one more to go. This is RF Mike.
What's going on, Android Central? This is RF Mike from the forums, recording on my Asus ZenWatch, like always. My question for you guys today involves the LG G4 and the V10. Do you guys think that the LG G4 will get the manual video control recording that the LG V10 has in a future update? I really do enjoy the camera abilities of the G4, but I can't really justify upgrading to the V10, especially with it being such a huge display. The only other way I would probably switch away from LG together would be if the Nexus devices would have a manual video control or even a manual camera control. The Nexus 6P is starting to look pretty good. Thank you guys for everything you guys do, and can't wait to hear what you guys have to say.
I think we'd all agree there's no technical reason why they couldn't do that if they wanted to, but would they want to get rid of... The camera hardware is the same on both phones.
But there's something different there. The first thing I did when I got this V10, I love taking macro pictures, and no Android phones have ever been really good at it until this V10. I was 2.5 centimeters away with the V10. The G4 won't even focus until you're out about 6 centimeters. I don't know if that's software. It could be part of the new camera app itself, but there is some fundamental differences in how the hardware works, even if the hardware is the same.
There's an extra gigabyte of RAM for what that's worth. I've been using this phone probably for more than a week. Unless you absolutely have to have that manual camera mode.
The pictures don't look any better. G4 pictures still look as beautiful now as they did.
You're guaranteed to be able to get that on there unofficially, even if LG doesn't do it.
Right.
Themselves. You can hack away things.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to go there, but absolutely, there's this little website called XDA that will hook you right up.
Good question. And hopefully we'll get some more details on that soon, especially now that the V10 is available. In fact, I tell you what, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll let Jerry talk about the V10 real quick, and I'll chime in a little bit too. And what else are we talking about? I forgot. The big giant Samsung tablet and Chrome and Android merging something, maybe. We'll see. So hang on. Be right back.
Shatterproof droids.
Be right back. What does it mean when every commercial bank in the Fortune 500 relies on Red Hat for enterprise software? Or that every department in the executive branch of the U.S. government does too? Or how about every airline in the Fortune Global 500? It means that more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 understand the value that supported enterprise open source software can bring to their business. If the value of open source is the rapid innovation, freedom, and interoperability that comes with community-powered technology, then the value of Red Hat is taking responsibility for that technology, testing it, enhancing security, and certifying that it will work in your data center. So what is Red Hat doing that's making such a big difference? Well, it's simple. Simple, but not easy. They make sure you can get all the benefits of open source without the risk of doing it all yourself. No one else can make that promise, much less keep it. So visit redhat.com to see how they can help your enterprise with application development, storage, and cloud computing. Red Hat, different for the sake of better technology. God, I forgot about that, didn't I? The new droids. They're kind of unremarkable to me.
Motorola.
I mean, if the tentpole feature, I said it, is that your phone won't break when you drop it, it kind of makes me wonder about the rest of it. I mean, and there's nothing.
Sorry, I missed plus, that. Couple of our seconds there. We're talking droids.
Yeah. So plus, I mean, how long until? I mean, someone's going to break one of these things eventually. It's just a matter of time before someone like
shoots
it or something, or drives a tank over it, or something like that.
I wish Phil would buy me one and say, Jerry, turn a video camera on and see what it takes to break this phone.
And when everyone does that, that's going to be more publicity for Motorola.
Right. I think that they may have gone a little overboard with saying the whole shatterproof thing. I mean, it's clearly very strong. We saw them doing a lot of things to a lot of phones that would normally make you want to cry. But like was Phil said, if that, of course, this is important. Like tentpole feature, whatever you want to call it, shatterproof screen. A lot of people have broken screens, cracked screens, whatever, and they keep using them. But what if it just makes the rest of the phone not that great because you made all these changes to make a shatterproof
display? Yeah, like that crappy plastic over display is going to look just great behind the non-shattered glass.
Right, so it has this pre-installed glass screen protector or plastic glass composite something screen protector on it that is pre-installed and non-removable that gives an extra light kind of gap. If you remember from phones a few years ago, they kind of had this gap between the display and the glass. That's kind of what's exhibited there. It also has huge bezels around the sides because, again, it has all this extra reinforcement around it. And this, as we found out with the G Flex 2, these flexible plastic OLED displays just don't exhibit all of the same great features of your standard OLED display, and it just does not look good. And, you know, are those things worth it to make sure that you can drop your phone and have the screen not crack? I don't know. That's up to you and how clumsy you are with your phone. But, you know, it also doesn't factor in the fact that, well, the metal and the rubber and the plastic on the phone is just going to get destroyed when you go spike it onto a concrete sidewalk as well. So it's not like the entire thing is rugged or anything like that. It's just the display is shatterproof.
Yeah, it's shatterproof, not indestructible is a distinction when I make that.
And, I mean, of course, this has been an issue. Broken screens are a problem. Broken glass on the back of your phone is a problem for the phones that have done that. But if people were this worried about it to make big compromises to use a phone that the screen couldn't break, there are plenty of Kyocera phones with sapphire screens that you could have bought the last 2 years as well, that I've looked at them, and you can hit them with a hammer. You can throw them in, you know, down a hallway, or, you know, you can do whatever you want to them, drop off a two-story building onto concrete and they won't break. But there are compromises to be had there to have such a rugged phone.
So back to, I guess, the V10, which I tried to segue into very badly. I mean, this is also another rugged-esque phone. I mean, LG, you know, well,
very similar to the Turbo 2.
It really is, yeah. And they will tell you, you know, like, hey, you know, don't drop it, but if it drops, you'll probably be all right. It's got this, you know, steel shell and, you know, rubber, not just edging, but the back too, which they call DuraGuard and DuraSkin, and just horrible names.
Would you almost put it in the same league as the Galaxy S Active series, where it's just got a little extra? I mean, I know it's not, it doesn't really look like a hiking boot, and it's not camo.
Yeah, like, I mean, it doesn't look or feel like it's a rugged phone. It looks and feels like it's a bigger GS4 with just, you know, different styles. And I actually like it a lot. I mean, I've been using it for a week and I don't hate it. And generally, I don't like bigger phones. And I mean, it was funny that the commenters in the review did the usual stuff. Oh, you keep saying it's big. Well, it's big. It's really big.
Real big. And it's real heavy.
But it's real heavy. That was the bigger thing for me.
Because it has a steel frame, right?
Yeah. And it's a little heavier than the Moto Nexus 6. It's about as heavy as the iPhone 6 Plus, I think. I need to get one in here and weigh it. My scale that I have here weighed it about 3 grams heavier than what it says on paper. So we'll see.
Conspiracy.
That was all the apps you installed.
Yeah, right. I like that. Was pretty funny, actually. But yeah, I mean, every night I tickle my daughter's arm as she's going to sleep, and we listen to a couple songs off the Frozen soundtrack. And this is the only phone that's been heavy for me to hold. Like it was just uncomfortable by the end of that. You know, the 5X is uncomfortable to hold because the speaker's so crappy. But yeah, it's a big phone, but I still love the feel of it. I think LG did a really nice job of making a big phone that doesn't make me want to smack somebody with it because it's that big and that uncomfortable.
That's the thing. When I took it out of the box and peeled all the plastic off of it. This is when you hear people talk about build quality and premium materials and how good a phone feels, this to me is like the epitome of all of that finally come to fruition. It just feels like it's amazingly built. Mm-hmm. You know, it shouldn't, and this, people are going to take this the wrong way, it shouldn't say LG on it. It should have like a designer, a premium brand, because it doesn't feel like anything else they've ever built before. It feels really nice.
And especially considering that the G4 was, I mean, we kind of gave it some knocks on still being kind of this chintzy plastic around the outside and the leather and the things not holding up very well.
It's funny.
I think it's really interesting to see what they do next year based on this. Because
yeah, right.
The thing with LG has always been they've gone, I mean, you kind of had the original Optimus G, which was this outlier, and then it's always been plastic since then. They've kind of switched to the materials, but it's always been this plastic frame, and you know, you can stick leather on the back of it, it still feels like plastic. And actually, we've got an interview coming up with Ramcharan Wu soon. He's talking about how with the G series, every year what they do is go for a new material and a new feel. And I think, obviously, that's kind of a hint at next year. I think we'll see something, that's, you know, especially now they're experimenting with stainless steel or whatever. That surely is going to be what they're using for the frame for the next G series phone. And if, you know, leather's been successful, maybe we're looking at steel and leather. You know, that there are worse combinations for than those two.
The more confusing thing to me was how the G series is now for, it's their more traditional phone, and this one is more for content creators. But like, I never felt that.
It's a phone.
Yeah, I mean, the G4, the G3 were great to shoot things with.
You weren't more compelled to create content for with this phone?
No.
It's not like it's a 10-inch tablet or something.
Right,
you know, exactly. Running some music software on it or whatever.
But it's, I just keep, this rubber back is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. They did a really nice job with it.
Yes, it's wonderful. It doesn't feel like any other phone that I've ever felt or held before. In a good way.
It's just that the name of DuraSkin and DuraGuard are really
bad. I want to see how that kind of tacky rubber back compares to the new Turbo 2, which is very much has the same. It's not super rubbery, but it's not like hard plastic either.
And Motorola has a nice
balance.
This is rubber, and it's not hard rubber. It's soft rubber. They are not even trying to. You know, I don't know what their actual word for the material is, but by God, it's rubber. It's soft, pushy, flexible, wonderful feeling, grippy rubber.
Well, that's your show title right there. By God, it's rubber.
It's DuraSkin, and there's so many things I want to say, but I won't.
Yeah, I'm trying to find. I'm looking at my notes from my meetings on that, and trying to see if I had anything weird written down about.
It's ribbed.
Yeah, I mean it's a tough silicone. It's not rubbery, but it's pretty tough. I like it. I mean, look, their software is still their software, and I've got a Korean version here, so it's loaded up with all sorts of stuff.
Well, you haven't seen anything yet. I've got a mobile version, and this phone will weigh 9 grams more from all the software.
I mean, that was my line in the review. Like, it has so much bloatware on it, even Verizon would be jealous. There's a lot going on, but
yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I put my usual stuff on it, and I'm using it just like I used any other phone. It's just,
yep.
The thing we need to get from Jerry is, you know, battery life and storage. Right. Did you look and see how much storage you have out of the box?
Nope, but I can look right now.
Yeah, take a look. There's supposed to only be a 64-gigabyte SKU, and I had, like, 44 and change, I think, before I put all my junk on it.
Oh, God, yeah. The settings menu. I already hate it.
But, yeah, it's... This is probably my favorite large phone. I'm real curious when I finally get a 6P, if that'll change, if I'll like the 6P better.
Just I have shape and size. I installed the Slack app and nothing else, updated what was currently on the phone, and have 48.86 gigabytes free of 64.
Yeah, so that's probably about right then. It's a nice phone. I don't think I would, if you can get some money for G4, then update, sure. But
if money is not the issue and you want to buy a new LG phone, this is definitely the one to buy.
I just know that it's bigger. Just yeah, an hour. It's where's my G4?
But it's,
I can't reach it.
I've got them both here. I'll talk so you can see it. It's taller. It's not a lot taller. Got a much bigger screen. And it's slightly wider, but not wide enough to feel different in when I'm holding it.
It doesn't make me miss the leather that much either. I mean, like, I like the leather, but it doesn't make me, you know, wish I had leather on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's just so much heavier. That's the thing. If that bothers you, that's going to bother you. There's no way you can sugarcoat it. This phone is heavy.
Very. All right. What next? Is that enough V10? Yeah. I mean, you know the one cool thing? Look in the review. I have a video of my daughter who loves banging on this bell at the playground at soccer practice. And if she was banging on it yesterday, I had the genius idea of let's use that to get you can control the directions of the microphones in this thing. Or, you know, you can have sound coming in from one side or more sound coming in from the other. You can have it balanced. So I used that to demonstrate that. And it was kind of interesting. And it's got my kid in it, and she's cute.
Very.
She's got one of my kids.
I can't believe she's yours. It's Milkman's kid.
Well, she's my wife's kid, too, so that helps.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Trying to think. Did I change my wife's Gmail account? No. I think she might not have had a Gmail account until after we got married. Consider that.
Well, it's because you've been married for 106 years. No, I'm sorry. I know your wife is 29.
11 years.
Lovely 29.
11 years. That's a long time. All right, what's next? You want to talk about the big giant tablet thing?
We can do. We can talk about the Samsung Galaxy View, which is, it's kind of called a tablet, but if you look at it kind of without tablets in mind, it is basically just an 18.4-inch display that is battery-powered that happens to run Android. And it really isn't kind of pitched in the same kind of super portable way as most tablets, even large tablets, are. So just the basic physical presence of the thing, it's an 18.4-inch screen, pretty hefty bezels, pretty plasticky, it doesn't look like it's going to break in a hurry. You've got a permanent fixed hinged stand-type thing on the back. Kind of a little bit difficult to describe. We have pictures of it in our hands-on. The idea is you can have it either standing facing you, kind of in like an easel type mode, or you can have it laying down flat with the screen facing towards you, kind of the same way you might have an iPad if you type it. The internals are basically you're pretty much your basic Samsung tablet internals. It has a suitably large battery. You're looking at about 8.5 hours of video playback, I think Samsung was saying. Which we'll have to test, a 1080p display on this thing. So you're looking at it as basically a viewport. It's not kind of... the idea is you're going to be viewing it from further away, so having a ridiculous pixel density isn't really what they're shooting for here.
How's it feel in the hand?
Heavy.
That was a joke.
It feels heavy in the hand. Look, I mean, you
what is it
supposed
weighing?
To have
one
because it... I have no idea. A lot. Sort of pick it up. It has a handle at the top for carrying around. But the thing is, the actual hinge doesn't close flat. So if you want to carry it around, you have to have it open at the top. And there is a case that you're designed to carry
it. It has a handle, which tells you how much it weighs.
Exactly.
They should sell a case for it with wheels and a telescoping handle, and you can just push it around.
the confusing thing with this for me is that, is it a tablet? Is it a display? How portable is it? There is going to be an LTE version, so make of that what you will. If you're taking it out of the house, you've got to deal with either carrying this big lumbering thing around. You can't pack it flat, really.
You
have this hinge, which is a permanent moving part.
Do you carry it by your side as you march on the train to go to work every day?
I've got a picture from the very first Galaxy Note launch of Alex carrying it like a surfboard. I've got to remake that.
Okay,
but look, it's a big tablet. It's a big tablet. It's designed to consume content. The price, I think, is about $600.
$600 in the US.
Yeah, so I mean that's kind of
interesting. They're only talking about 8 hours of battery life.
For video playback. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I kind of feel like this needs to have good battery life because it's just going to sit around a lot of the time and you don't want to have to be lugging it over to a power outlet.
I mean, is this supposed to be like one of those bring the family around home hub type deals? Kind of like what we saw
A little bit, yeah. And they have apps on there.
Holy crap, this thing is heavy. guess how much you think this thing weighs.
4.5 pounds.
Any other takers?
I'm going to say 2.5 pounds.
Oh, just get out of here. Adam, okay, 5.85 pounds.
Ooh, no.
It's heavy.
No.
I mean, it was pretty funny looking at these things. We had a bunch of journalists around trying to...
Five pounds.
All of that is going to be screen and battery, of course. So I mean, look, you try and hold it on one hand, it's like you are just going to drop it or break.
I guess if you think about it, yeah, operating an 18.5-inch screen requires a lot of battery.
And yeah. we're making the mistake of thinking of this as just another Android tablet.
It's not a tablet. Yeah.
This is that weird thing that Samsung is inventing a category here, and it may be wildly successful. You know, look at the Note.
I mean, they're positioning this like there have been a few others that have done this, and it's like a sit on the kitchen island in your house,
right?
You know, kind of a kiosk. People, you know, kids eating breakfast in the morning, you put up Netflix on there for a second, then you flip it around, you use it sometime other and later in the day or, you know, whatever. And it's just kind of just an extra screen to just show you some interesting things when you're not, you know, obviously a lot of people are just going to have the big TV in the family room. They all have their tablets and things. This is just like a communal screen, utility screen.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, you also get all the Samsung software stuff. Actually, it's a little bit weird because you don't have the physical buttons that Samsung tablets have had for a while now, but you mm-hmm. they have a kind of a separate multitasking layout, so all the apps are arranged along the bottom, so it's easy to get to there. You know, all the windowed mode stuff, which of course is super useful on an 18.5-inch display. But, you know, you've got to wonder, like Andrew was saying, how's the idle battery life going to be? Because it's running Lollipop, it's not running M, you've not got...
Is it not supposed to be plugged in most of the time?
But that's what
it's a stand. It has a stand, so...
If I had that thing, I wouldn't carry it around, so I wouldn't care about the battery life. I'd just leave it plugged in.
Yeah.
But there are also other kind of leftover things from the whole tablet and phone sort of DNA that this thing has. Like, micro USB port.
There's a dialer in it.
Well, look, there's an LTE version. There might well be.
There's
we only
LTE
play with the
version?
Wi-Fi only ones. There is an LTE version, yeah.
I will pay money for video of Alex making a phone call with that.
There is no tablet. There is no earpiece or anything like that. But there is, like, the world's biggest volume rocker at the top, the world's biggest power button next to it. So
wonderful.
The buttons are like 3 inches wide. That would be so cool.
The buttons are pretty big. Ridiculously big, but they are pretty.
Yeah, they showed that big home screen view where it has like these kind of big tile things where you just.
Yeah. So the other side of it is the software, and because this is a content consumption device, they have a bunch of content partnerships that they're going after. And the US, we had a grid of all these US content providers, so you can, you know, instead of messing around an app drawer, those are the ones you have there. It's kind of like, it's in the same position as Flipboard Briefing is on a Galaxy phone. You just go in there, it's a big button that you just press, and especially if you've got kids, even listening to your kids, it's something they can maybe operate a little easier than, running around an app drawer. So
I just think this isn't a very... very odd thing where we've seen, you know, laptop manufacturers hardly ever even make 17-inch laptops anymore. It's kind of 15.5 inches is the max there. Tablets normally will go 10, maybe 12 inches. And, I mean, the middle ground there is kind of, or anything above that is kind of this odd middle ground where, okay, I could just share this to my TV with Chromecast or Apple TV or whatever, or start up a stream independently on Android TV on the TV. So it just seems very awkward.
If you are looking at this as sort of like a living room tablet type, or living room type display, or kitchen counter type display, at what point is it more cost effective, especially if it is just for content consumption, you have Netflix and all this other stuff on there, at what point is it easier to just get a cheap 18-inch TV or whatever and plug a Chromecast into it?
Right, or 30
might well be lighter. Well,
yeah.
I mean, for $600, you can buy a very nice 40-inch TV and a Chromecast for the same price.
Now, the flip side is, with the right custom app built in it, this is a great kiosk device.
Sure.
Businesses, you've got 40 people in an office that all they really need to do is stay connected through this one particular piece of software. If you can get it to run on Android, boom, everybody has a touchscreen 18-inch device. Yeah.
And everyone's also $600 lighter.
Well, you pay $600 for a good business class computer for your office. I think businesses may be able to find a way to use this.
Yeah, it's just not, I just don't feel like we're exploring that at all. It's being sold as a family living room, kitchen.
It is very, very consumer focused. Maybe the form factor itself isn't a bad idea. Maybe there's stuff that can be done with it. Like, you know, we talked about the original Note before. That form factor took a while to get refined to something that wasn't just kind of clumsy and horrible to use.
And think about the things they can learn here and potentially apply to their smart TVs or something in the future. I mean, what they're doing with software here and, you know, not the highest end processor and only 2 gigs of RAM kind of thing, you know, it looks like they could do this on a larger screen like their smart TVs. Their smart TVs don't have great software in the first place either. And this is all very content consumption, lean back kind of experience stuff.
Maybe, but then maybe that's what Tizen's for, so who knows?
All right, tell you what, let's take one more break. When we come back, we'll get into the Q&A. We will talk Chrome and Android merging or not. That might take less time than we think. We'll wrap it up. Hang on, be right back. TransferWise is a smart way to send money abroad. If you've ever tried to move money across international borders, you know it can be a real pain. Banks and other providers charge hidden fees, often by marking up the exchange rate they give you, and that's unfair. TransferWise is different. There's a small percent fee on each transfer, and they give you the real market exchange rate. That's the exchange rate that you see on Google or Bloomberg, not the unfair rate that most banks use when you send money abroad. And that's why TransferWise is up to 8 times cheaper than sending money abroad with your bank. Of course, you're not going to trust just anyone with your money, but TransferWise is trustworthy, it's regulated by the same rules that apply to your banks, and is made by the people who built Skype, backed by investors like Richard Branson, and it's been trusted by people like you in more than 50 countries to send more than $5 billion overseas. Yes, it's $5 billion and counting. So are you ready to try TransferWise? Just go to transferwise.com/android, and your first transfer up to $500 will be free. Then there's Jerry.
Hey, I gotta be me.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Or something.
Dude, you act like you're the first person that's ever been disappointed in Jerry. Come on, man.
All right, Chrome and Android, what's up? Wall Street Journal said they're merging. And then everybody else said, nope.
Wall Street Journal says a lot of things.
Well, the Wall Street Journal said, well, the big thing was it's not merging as much as the Wall Street Journal indicated that Chrome was being brought into Android. Android was consuming Chrome and its features and where it is.
I mean, if you look at the general trend with Chrome and Android, Chrome is now on Android as an app. But the trend is towards Chrome OS becoming more Android-y, not Android becoming more Chrome-like. So you look at things like ArcWeld, the ability to run Android apps on a Chromebook. That's the general direction things are going in. And if you didn't see that and, you know, project the trajectory of eventually some way or other, whether it's through actually running Android or through basically just having an Android virtual machine on there on top of the kernel, which, you know, at which point that you're kind of blurring the lines anyway. If you didn't see this coming, then, you know, I don't know what to say.
It shouldn't be. Ever since Sundar took over both Chrome and Android and to make them work better together and you know, kind of share some ideas between them, it has made a lot of sense that they start to come closer and closer together. And it's, I don't know, it just seems like at the same time, Android is far more polished as just a general OS and is used more, can be used in many more interesting ways on different hardware than Chrome can. Chrome just doesn't have the base, I guess, to work on more devices the way Android does.
And Android is growing in that direction as well. If you look at some of the features that were kind of there a little bit in the M preview, things like the experimental split screen mode, I think we can all agree that eventually that is going to be something that's officially part of Android, whether it's in N or O or whichever year it comes out in. And that could well play a part in whatever folding into Android of Chrome OS occurs. So
Hiroshi Lockheimer, who now runs Android, Chromecast, and Chrome OS, tweeted out, not quite quickly enough, that there's a ton of momentum for Chromebooks, and we are very committed to Chrome OS. I just bought two for my kids for schoolwork.
Well, and of course he's going to say that no matter what. I don't know. He's going to say that no matter what. And we're talking, the Wall Street Journal, going off of, you know, people familiar with the matter or whatever, they're talking about 2017 maybe being the date that it starts to integrate the two. You can of course, you can still say you're committed to Chrome, and all of the other, any Chromebook that's bought today, bought a year and a half from now, is still going to be supported. It's not like they're just going to flip the switch and your next Chrome update is going to install Android on your Chrome.
Or that you're just going to stop getting Chrome updates altogether. You could imagine that if this transition does happen where Chrome OS becomes part of Android, or however it's phrased or however the mechanics of it work, the support isn't just going to end for the Chromebooks that are out there, whether they get updated to Android or not, or whether they just stay on there. There is an expectation of keeping this up to date.
And not to mention that Chrome as a browser for other platforms is going to continue on as well.
No way, dude. You have to install Android on your MacBook now.
I think. So
that was the other part that people got way... I mean, I think the Wall Street Journal could have made it clear, but this Chrome as a browser is going to continue on and be available on other platforms. It's not, we've already seen Google tried this like app launcher thing and apps in Chrome on Windows and Mac. They backed off on that. They're going to continue to use Chrome as a browser, and it's an extremely popular browser at that. They're not going to get rid of that and make you install an instance of Android to run something like Chrome on your MacBook.
I think the internet did what the internet does and kind of ran with that way too quickly. And I'll firmly place us in the middle of that as well. We did our news post.
I have people familiar with the matter too.
Yep.
And they told me that, no, it's not that simple. That things are moving closer together. And Alex pretty much nailed a lot of the stuff of how the Pixel C is going to see things move even closer together, but Chrome is not going away. It's just not.
Chrome is just way too popular. I mean, it has a lot of good parts to it. I just think that Google can share a lot of ideas between Android and Chrome that can make a lot of sense. We saw this at Google I/O 2014. They talked about all this crazy stuff with Android and Chrome coming together, and that not a lot of that stuff has happened yet, but it makes sense that they're starting to learn from each other.
And like we were saying back then, this is a shortcut to one of the shortcuts. It's a pretty long road at this point, but it is a way for them to get a reasonable desktop level ecosystem in the way they don't currently have, and they can't really have it all with an OS that is just a browser.
Right. I mean, picture you've got a Chromebook, and you make it better when you can install Android apps in a Chromebook. Let's be honest, there's a lot of apps in the Chrome store, but they're not really apps. They're just web browser play toys and stuff mostly. But you install an Android app on a Chromebook, and it's a big blown up Android app. I can picture there being views for developers to use that their app is compatible with not only a phone and a tablet, but now it's specialized for a Chromebook, and the runtime's a little bit different. In essence, that's Android merging into Chrome, but it's still Chrome with just better tools for all of us.
Yeah, I think the way to look at it is that Google is leveraging it from the Android side over to the Chrome side, because there's just not as much on the Chrome side to leverage for cross-device, down from a 4-inch phone to a 25-inch desktop monitor. There's more to leverage on Android than there is on Chrome.
Let's use all that to segue into the Q&A. Faraz? Hopefully I'm saying that right. Does this change anyone's mind to purchase the Pixel C? No.
This should make you want the Pixel C.
Make you want it more.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not buying the Pixel. I know we talk about not buying something for what it might do one day, but I think the Pixel C is kind of the perfect product to break that rule.
Well, I mean, the Pixel C was never something you should buy just for what it has in the box. I mean, the same goes for owning a Chromebook Pixel. It's always been about you're spending too much for what it is right now, but you're on the bleeding edge.
Doug says, curious how this will affect the Knox-like security feature in BYOD. I'm not sure.
I'm confused.
Are we going to lead any credence to that rumor that Knox is gone and won't be on the next phones from Samsung?
No, I mean, there's going to be something. Right.
But, I mean, I don't know. If the stuff that Google borrowed from Knox and the stuff they added themselves for their business, security, quote, whatever you want to call it, if that works good enough, Samsung no longer has to maintain something. So I have no idea what's going to happen with Knox. and I still have no idea to answer his question. I probably should have just stayed quiet. Phil, why you let me talk?
Oh, Frost says, Back to the Future 2015 predicts Chrome OS and Android merging in 2025, and Tesla announces Tesla Home, a house built and sold by Tesla. Off-grid solar-powered charge station for your Model 3, which comes included with the house. I would buy that in a heartbeat if I had anywhere near the money. I was excited by that for a minute. Nobody else. Fine. Oh, God. The question that won't die. Nexus 5X and 6P. Why can the two devices transfer data at the USB-C 3.1 speed of 10 gigabits? Excuse me. We get emails already. Why can they or why can't they? Do they?
Well, no, they don't. They can't because the hardware is...
They're only 2.0.
Why that was done... I mean, the only logical explanation I can think of is because the USB 3.0 over USB Type-C spec isn't finalized yet. So anybody can do whatever they want. When the spec gets finalized, if they don't follow the spec, we'll call them on it. I wish it was faster. I even have a video here of it on a new MacBook with a USB-C connector to compare file transfers. It's no faster at all. You know, it's the same because it's just an old USB 2.1 spec.
Faraz, who's all over the place, and I really hope I'm saying that right, does the Nexus 6P bending video bother anyone? Yes, it bothers me because it's a crappy video.
It's also a video of a Nexus 6P that doesn't have the same stuff silkscreened on the back of the retail model.
Really? I didn't notice that. Really?
It doesn't say Huawei down on the bottom, and when they called him out on that in his video, he closed the comments.
I say when you scratch a display in any way like that a number of times.
Very weak.
And take a torch to it and urinate on it or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what was up with the burning.
It's a BS video, and we're all dumber for having seen it.
Look, any linesman out there that use odd cutters to cut big wires all day will know what I'm talking about. I'm in a wheelchair. My hands are strong. My forearms are strong, really freaking strong. This V10, I can flex it. Sorry, Phil, but the first thing I do when I take them out of the box is see how they'll bend. The Nexus 6, I can get it to bend. The Moto X 2014, I could get it to bend. All phones will bend if you apply enough force. Anything will bend.
Can you get people who make really bad bend test videos to bend?
I think if you got the right person, you could bend them over like a 12 gauge.
Yeah, it's not a good video, guys. Don't. I think my joke last week was no scientific test ever started out, hey, guys.
Well, a bunch of people at the barbecue, we talked about bending this phone that I've got in my hands. If you were one of those people that sat down with me when we tried to bend it, you could see me make it start to flex.
Sure.
And then when I handed it to you, you saw just how much force it was required to make it flex. The phone's not going to bend.
All right, here's the V10. Let me see.
Do it, Phil. Do it. Get a Hulk on it. Just break it in half.
No. Because I don't want to break the glass or anything. I mean, like...
Right. That's the thing.
Because that's totally normal usage. Yeah. You know, when I'm talking on the phone, I kind of talk to it holding my hands like this, and I bend it so the sound will come out.
Everybody's an engineer. Oh, my God. It's so horrible.
Somebody put up a rebuttal. I think it was TK Tech Reviews. I don't want to – I'm not 100% sure. They have several Nexus 6Ps, and you can see his knuckles turning white and his forearm straining, and the phone's not bending.
Yeah, it's...
He also shows you that it has the correct logos, and it's a real phone.
Do not give that sort of crap the views. Just don't.
If you want to view them because it's hilarious, just remember that it's entertainment, not science.
Yeah, and that's my bigger thing. Like, these are not scientific tests. If I sat here and bit this, it would not be a scientific test. I couldn't tell you how much force it took.
Apple putting it on a machine with a force meter to showing what it takes to bend their iPhone 6, that's a scientific test.
Doing it once is not a scientific test. Right.
But even then, even putting it on a force meter like and bending it at a certain point, that has nothing to do with how you actually use your phone.
Exactly. But I mean, you can't. You can't go off of somebody bending something and not telling you what strength it bends at.
Or how many times they tried to bend it before they turned that camera on.
Going down to the bottom, Chris wants to know, how's data coverage or speed while using an imported device from China? Can you live without LTE? I'm in Florida. I was looking at a Xiaomi, Meizu. Don't do it.
Yeah, don't bother with it.
It's one of those things, like, you can try it. But
that are made to be used where you live.
And look, in theory, if you check the bands and they line up, it should work on, you know, T-Mo or AT&T. Because that's just GSM, and you know, if the bands are there, then it'll work. But what you won't get is things like voice over LTE, most likely, like things like carrier aggregation when they arrive. Right. And it won't have been tested on that network. So even if it does work, which it should if the bands line up, then you're not guaranteed anything.
Yeah. Let's see. When do you think Android 6.0 will come to Android Wear? That's a really good question, because we know because of the Watcher Bane 2, that there's new stuff coming. It's just a matter of what and when. I don't know. That was a good answer, Phil. Thanks.
I don't know that what they're going to call it, but a big update's coming.
Yeah.
It has to.
So here's another question. I don't know if it's Jamie or Jaime, but no, either one. He said, I would rather have 1 year replacement offered by HTC or pay for Nexus Protect for the extra warranty rather than have a ugly shatterproof Droid 2.
Very good point.
And that's exactly, a very good point. And would you don't want to compromise the other trade-offs of the screen being bad or anything like that.
Would you want to compromise something that is happening every day in the quality of the screen, the, you know, the physicality of the phone, or would you want to, if something does go bad, just pay $100 and get the screen replaced?
Right.
Yep.
And yeah, that's the way Nexus Protect is. It's, you can have even two claims in 2 years, and it's like $75 to have it replaced, and you have a new phone the next day.
Mike says, I feel like that's
better.
Mike says, you guys need to stop crapping all over the Nexus 5X. Some of us don't want big phones, you know. No, it's not about the size for me. I mean, and actually, I dare say it's maybe a little small for me now. It's between the speed of the camera launching, which is not speedy, and the bad speaker, the display is really good outside. I was very surprised by that, and some of that just has to do with differences. But like the G4 and the V10, I can't take a picture holding the phone like this when I have sunglasses on because the polarization is messed up and I can't see the screen.
They're not very bright.
Yeah, but so the 5X display outside was surprisingly good.
And I don't think crapping all over the 5X.
Yes, Jerry.
Back to the display outside. That's super, super subjective because I'm in hot water right now. Because I said the 5X is not good out in the sun, but the 6P is like the Note 5. It's much better. To me, those two phones are fine out in the sun. Other people are saying that they look horrible out in the sun and an LCD is better. So that's going to depend on your eyes and, you know, a lot of other factors, I think. But I liked it. I'm sorry.
Easy enough.
The 5X, we were talking about this morning. The 5X is just like any other Nexus that's ever launched. The hardware is nice. The software is there. And it has a lot of stuff that needs tweaked and worked on. And that's the same as we should be used to until Google throws a second Nexus into the mix that launched with no problems. That's what makes me question. They did it for one phone. Why have they not been able to do it for all the rest of the phones? But I think if you give your 5X an update or two, you're going to love it.
Pablo wants to know, is there any possibility we might see a Moto X Play US edition, or did the Verizon exclusive completely stop that from happening? I think that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that is your US version. What you can do, there is a Canadian version, forget the model number, but you look that up, it has the bands for the US operators, and it will work just fine.
It's a lot of work just to...
Yeah, and a lot of work for, frankly, what is not a very good phone.
Yeah. That, I think I'm going to stick a fork in it. I feel like we forgot something, but I don't care. We're sticking a fork in it anyway. The next week is going to be weird. I go to China on Sunday and arrive Monday night, because that's how that sort of thing works. So these guys are in charge all week, which is awesome. So I'm going to be there all week, which means you guys are doing the podcast on your own next week.
Sports car podcast.
We will never put a stick of fork in it. It's just going to go on and on.
I mean, that's fine, because you guys got to edit it. I've already done your ad reads. You just got to be sure to put them in.
I
or
can do it.
You owe me money. Or somebody money. Do I get the money? I should get the money. That's how I see it. Again, if you haven't already, historyofandroid.com. Be sure to swing by and check that out. Alex is doing some really good work. Pure Android t-shirts or merch, clothes, whatever.
Buy them. Buy them. We're having a contest, an internal contest. Buy the shirt.
It's doing really well. There's just not a lot left. So get in there while you can. Android Central app, getting better all the time. I just pushed out the latest update to everybody. By the way, I played around with... have you seen what Google does now? You can have timed updates, which the documentation was a little weird. I had it not quite 100% right. They made it sound at first like you could schedule an update and like have it push live at a scheduled time. They meant like you can schedule an update by saying, hey, I'm going to push an update at 6 o'clock. And then at 6 o'clock, you hit the button and then it goes live. That's what they meant. So it's not like so, automatic.
Wait, update everybody at 4:20. Just do it.
No. Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of cool. So I played around with that. It's a little clunky in the implementation, but it works. So that's cool. So I don't think it's going to, you know, end the troll outs, but, you know, because it's up to developers to use it. But it also means, you know, it takes away the guesswork. If you want to tell people something's going live at noon, you can actually push it live at noon. So that's very cool.
Victor really wants to hear what I think about something.
Okay.
And nobody ever really wants to hear what I think.
Fine.
So I'm going to find out what I'm supposed to. Did I get his picture?
Yes, it was the picture. It was the fingerprint picture.
Oh, the fingerprint picture.
Fingerprint GIF.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dude, I thought that was freaking awesome, and it should be the boot animation for the device.
If you haven't seen
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
We shared it last week. I mean, good luck finding it, but we share a lot of stuff. Go follow us on the YouTubes and the Instagrams, all the social things. I'll be in China if you want to see pictures from China next week, unless you're in China and you know what China looks like. I've never been. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
You're going to get in trouble. You're going to end up in jail in China.
No.
Jerry, help. I got to get Phil out.
Promise my wife I would behave.
This is costing me $5 a minute. Jerry, please come get me out of the...
What do you mean I'm not allowed to do this? Don't you know who I am and where I'm from?
Just, all right. Good people of Android Central out there, listen to my voice. These guys know the right thing to do. They just sometimes need to be reminded of it. So at some point during the week, tweet at Jerry and Alex and Andrew and Russell and all them and just say, what would Phil do? And then they're probably going to do the opposite. But you should still remind them, is my point.
To be fair, we do that sometimes even when you're the one telling us what you would do.
That is absolutely true. All right, I think that's it for this week. I think next time you hear from me, I'll finally have a Nexus 6P, so there's that.
You're collecting it in China?
Yeah, no, it's just being delivered while I'm on the other side of the world, which makes total sense.
Well, jump in there and change your shipping address to China. That won't
get your yeah. Phil Nick
That'll get it there quicker.
China.
So, good luck. See you on the other side. Alex.
Phil.
Andrew.
Jerry.
Russell.
Russell's not here.
Russell, yeah.
Russell's working. He's working hard. He needed the day off.
Stop doing that, Russell. That's not going to get you anywhere.
Everybody listening at home, thank you. Everybody watching live, thanks. See y'all.
Bye.
See you later.
That excellent episode of the Android Central Podcast was brought to you by Red Hat. In theory, Red Hat open source software is secure because everyone can scrutinize it, more independent security experts want to test it, and more engineers are there to fix it. And in practice, Red Hat runs more securely in every single U.S. government executive department data center, including the Department of Defense. Red Hat, you can build on it, run on it, and count on it. Find out how at redhat.com.